Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
At Parker, our purpose is simple. We want to make the world a better place. By working more efficiently, by using more sustainable practices, by developing better technologies, we keep moving forward. With each new idea, innovation, and partnership, we're one step closer to fulfilling our purpose every single day. To find out more, visit parker.com/purpose. Parker, engineering your success.
Give me the keys, Mike.
Chevy Chase.
Hey, you just passed the Garden State Parkway South.
Don't worry, I'll get you there.
Demi Moore.
Oh, no, cop. Driver, step outside the car, please.
John Candy.
Read him. Yeah, that's nice, thanks. Lower back, please. I got an itch right up in there. It's good, thank you.
Not today, sir. This may be Valkenvania, but it is still America. Wouldn't mind, would you just write a ticket here, or we could settle it some other way, perhaps?
That's not the way things work around here.
What is this place?
Revolving District Court for the Village and Shire of Valkenvania is now in order. The Honorable Reeve, Alvin Valkenizer, presides.
Dan Aykroyd.
Put out that dog rocket!
Nothing but trouble.
I'm so sorry.
Hey, you know, you and I ought to spend a little more time together.
I'd like that.
Would you?
Welcome to the last resort.
You look pretty this evening, sister. Doing something different with your hair?
Where something's always cooking.
How about a nice Hawaiian punch?
Here's some good friends.
Okay, let's eat.
Where someone's always shaken. And anything's better than house policy.
What's house policy? Whatever man touches her is the one she keeps.
What?
All they wanted.
Oh, no, wait a minute. I just went through a damn stoplight.
Was a little getaway.
I think the two of you'd make a perfect couple.
You make this a bride?
No, not in front of all these people, Your Honor.
Mm-hmm. Now.
All they got was nothing but trouble.
Welcome to They Call This a Movie, testing the strength of friendships one terrible movie at a time. Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and other podcast services by searching They Call This a Movie. We are part of the Main Damie Network, and to find more from us, check out the website at themaindamie.com or on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at The Main Damie. We're also now a proud member of Geek Fives Nation. You can find them at gvnation.com. Welcome back to They Call This a Movie. This is Anthony DelVecchio. With me, as always, is Dan Aquino and Mark Meyer. Say hello, gentlemen.
Hey, how's it going?
Guys, do you ever think we'll get to the point where we can write something and people will just make it without asking any questions?
No.
Okay.
Not in this Hollywood system. You got to write Ghostbusters first, and then give you carte blanche. It's like, make this insane movie.
That's the only thing I was thinking in this whole movie. Yeah, it was just, if anybody else brought this to a studio, they would just laugh it off.
Yeah. Yeah, but when you look at the budget numbers, they ain't laughing.
No.
But before we get into this week's movie, gentlemen, what did you watch this week?
That's a good question. Oh, I've been watching
every week.
Yep. I've been binge watching Scrubs. Do you remember that show?
I loved Scrubs.
Yeah, I love certain characters in Scrubs. Like, I love John C. McGinley.
Yep.
I think he's awesome. And Ted.
Ted's great too.
Ted, yeah. He passed away, right? The character, the actor who plays him.
Yes.
Is that the surgeon? Or?
No. That's the lawyer. You're thinking of Todd.
Todd, yes, the Todd.
Yeah, I was Todd for Halloween.
Oh, really?
I don't know if you remember that.
Did you rock the banana hammock?
No, I had I did the sleeveless scrub and the fire. I bought that online, the fire bandana.
That's a good.
And had one of the people with the newspaper draw the tattoos on me.
Give everyone a high five.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Todd's fine in small doses, but yeah, Ted might be my favorite. Just because he's so spineless.
Yeah.
He's great. John C. McGinley. I forgot that John C. McGinley has been in some like powerhouse movies.
Yeah. Yeah. Platoon, I think, was like his first big role.
Yeah. Yeah. He was great in that. I think he was in Wall Street.
I think so. Sounds about right.
Yeah. He's been in some big movies, and I don't know if he's still like around. Like, I know he's alive, but I don't know if he's still around.
Not for long.
I don't know what he's done. I haven't seen him in anything recently.
If John C. McGinley dies after this, I'm not doing the podcast anymore.
We have a curse.
Yes.
That's all? You haven't watched a movie? It's okay to say no, because I haven't either.
No, just been binge-watching Scrubs.
What about you, Mark?
Yeah, so the only fun thing I did this week, and I'll be real quick about it, to surprise of no one on this podcast, I've been listening to that new OC podcast that Rachel Bilson and Melinda Clark are doing. The fun thing that I'm probably the only one that actually listens to that is more interested in is all the insider Hollywood stuff that they talk about. Okay. Like Josh Schwartz talks about a whole thing about pilot season and the rush to that and that whole thing and Bibles and stuff like that. And then the casting director is on the second episode and they just talk about all the casting decisions and who they brought in to audition and all that. That's the stuff I love. And then they go into the episode. I'm like, oh, I've seen these a dozen times. So, but the first half of all of the two episodes so far have been very interesting. And if you like any of that insider stuff, it's really fascinating to, as honest as I think somebody would be as a creator talking about his first creation, Josh Schwartz was in that first episode in terms of the crunch they had to do, you know, had it late in the fall instead of the summer for pilot season. So everything was condensed. And needing to get it on before the World Series and all that insider stuff. So it's pretty interesting if you're either a fan of the OC or like to hear that stuff. I've been listening to that and then rewatching the episodes as they go. Just the HBO keeps my money for a little bit so I don't have to dig out the DVD.
Gotcha. As for me, I can't think of a single thing I watched. We watched half of the Dora the Explorer movie.
Oh, boy.
It was fine. It's obviously not my demographic that it's playing to, but it was fine. Michael Pena's in it. Who doesn't love Michael Pena?
Oh, yeah.
That's about it. I, for the first time in this house, I set up my PlayStation. So I've been playing a little bit of that. And then I'm also guesting on the Game Vault pod because of some untoward comments someone has made about all-time classic video games. So I had to actually wind up going back and playing those as well. So that's been my time, has been trying to research in order to take someone's ass to school, basically.
Yeah, it'll be fun for the podcast.
That podcast is already out by the time you hear this, actually. So go check out the Game Vault's latest episode, where we also talk about frame rates and fidelity. I don't know what either of those mean. I didn't realize you had to choose one or the other. It's going to be fun.
I didn't know what fidelity was either.
Just graphics.
I had to look it up. Yeah.
It's performance versus graphics, essentially, is what that is.
Should have just said that, really.
Yeah.
what a nerd.
Yeah.
He needed that, the FF, the alliteration.
Yep, that's what it was. We all know Tom, and that's his shtick. Yeah.
To be honest, I would have chosen something like that, too, because saying alliterations or something that sounds cool, you know.
The only other thing I've been diving into has been, I've been listening to a podcast. I've been listening to Dimension 20's Fantasy High D&D podcast, which is a lot of fun.
Yes, it is.
I fell off Critical Role a long time ago when I didn't have a 3-hour commute anymore. It's nice to get back into one that is 18 episode stories.
Yep.
So nice and easy, which I'm having a lot of fun with that one. That one's a good one.
Yeah, and as I keep saying to, I mentioned to Dan, and you're finding out, is that a lot of these people are former UCB people, so the improv and the scenes between them don't go as deep into super serious and cringe sometimes.
Yeah.
It's a lot of, to use a term I probably use a lot on here, there's a lot of yes handing, and sometimes you can tell when a joke sort of starts dying out and mm-hmm. then they just let it go.
It's good. And that's all I've been kind of doing, really, that is any interest. You guys want to hear about me mowing the lawn? I don't think you do. Or all the sticks that I got rid of this week.
I was just doing that.
Yeah, our stick guy came this week. I was very excited. It was a huge stick pile.
How fun is that, right? We did that with our leaves, and they bring over a fucking truck, and it's a vacuum. Yeah.
Yep.
Well, wonders never cease. I didn't know that they did that.
Home ownership, man. It's crazy.
Man, it's really... No one prepared me for that.
Did you make the truck go Hong Kong when it showed up, Dan?
No, unfortunately not. I was getting ready for work, and he passed by, and I didn't... Maybe next time. Next time I will.
I didn't ask my guy that either, but when he... Because my office window looks right out to where the stick pile was, so when the truck came, I kind of like ran into the other room to tell my wife, they're here! They're about to show up.
Oh my goodness, that is adorable and sad at the same time.
Because it was like 2 days late. They're supposed to come on Monday, and then they didn't come until Wednesday. And I was like, oh my God, finally.
Well, we've also reached like our mid-30s. So we're settling into just being like super lame white dudes now.
And I kind of feel like the pandemic expedited that.
Yes. Big time.
Like we're really into homebody stuff now.
Oh, yeah. And if I could stay home and clean, I would much rather do that than go anywhere. I look for excuses like, oh, you know, I really do want to see my friend, but dishes aren't going to clean themselves. But we have a dishwasher. Nah, I'll do it. It's fine. I'll hand wash it.
Yeah. And I'll have lawn shoes.
gotta get the New Balances, dude.
That's exactly what they are.
Yep. There it is. We've entered full dad mode.
Yep, just without the...
Without the kid.
The crushing defeat of fatherhood.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that's so dark, but it's true. He's not wrong.
Prove me wrong, guys. Prove me wrong. I guess that's all we have for our little opening. So we are going to take a quick break and listen to some ads so we can pay those bills until we go to the moon. But we'll be right back. And welcome back. Now it's time to get into this week's movie. And this week was Dan's pick. Dan, why don't you introduce this week's movie?
Okay, so it was my pick, but we took a request from a good friend of ours, and they requested the movie Nothing But Trouble from 1991, which sports a pretty stellar cast, if I may say so. And I'm sure you guys would agree.
Yep.
Yeah.
And I hate this movie. It's what people would call in the business not good.
Oh, you got care to elaborate?
Sure. I got to reach out to our friend and let them know. And, you know, they'll hear it on the podcast, but I want to tell them in person that they successfully found a movie where I did not laugh once. I did not crack a smile. I was dead inside while I watched this movie.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
It's just, it's pitiful. That's a good word for it. It's a pitiful movie.
Sure. Mark, what about you? Where are you coming from with Nothing But Trouble?
So I never heard of this movie beforehand. I kept telling people I was watching Nothing to Lose, which may have been a better movie.
Do not pick Nothing to Lose. Let's never figure that one out.
Yeah. I won't. Yeah, so I alluded to it in the open. Yeah, it just really felt like a movie that a bunch of friends wrote, but in Dan Aykroyd's case, it feels like it was his brother came up with a story, he wrote the script, and they got somebody to fund it, is what this entire movie felt like. It was incomprehensible in terms of what they were actually going for. I have no idea what was up with Demi Moore's character at all in this movie, outside of being smoking hot early 90s Demi Moore. But yeah, and the one thing that bothered me, and this shows you how much, as you guys know me, that I didn't enjoy this movie or care too much. Whole time, I wanted to know who that one character actor was that played like the foreign husband.
Taylor Negron.
Okay. And I was like, I know him from a lot of stuff. I'm not going to the IMDb.
Yeah, it's not worth it.
It's not worth it. Yeah. And the whole time I was waiting for Brian Doyle Murray to show up, and then he's in the end. So, you know,
like
everything
eight
that,
seconds.
Yeah. And for everything this movie could have presented, it's the worst parts of Chevy Chase. It's the most batshit stuff from the mind of Dan Aykroyd, and it doesn't work at all. It just feels like a lot of them got a paycheck and Demi Moore had some time off and decided to do this, because I don't know how this got produced without going deep dive into actually who funded this movie, you know, and just being like, oh, okay, I see why. Dan Aykroyd was just like, I have this script, and like, yeah, here's whatever, and you're going to tell us the amount soon, and it'll probably astonish us. But yeah, it just felt like the ultimate, I need my friends to get some money, we have nothing to do for 2 weeks.
Okay. So I have heard of this movie. I've heard it's terrible. And I remember, like, back, this is another one of those VHS rental movie posters I vaguely remember. And I didn't really know anything about this movie until I became an adult, know how shitty it is. And horror comedy is hard, guys. It is a tightrope to walk, and this one falls right off the tightrope immediately. For every Shaun of the Dead and Zombieland, there is probably 1,000 nothing but troubles. This was a chore to sit through. I had no fun. I will give credit. The production design looks like people were having fun making things. You know,
yeah.
like it seems like the crew had a really good time on this set. That's the reason why they went over budget, because Dan Aykroyd couldn't say no. it's yoga hosers is what it is.
Yeah,
that's
a good point.
So good.
And it's also probably where the designs for the Bratzies came from. These sweaty diaper babies in this movie. Every time you think this movie is hit its low point, it introduces something else that makes it worse.
Yeah.
Whether it's Dan Aykroyd as the old man, and then introducing that he has a penis nose, and then
I forgot about that.
Then the bone stripper. And then, you know, John Candy in drag. And then the female cop was my least favorite.
Yeah.
I didn't understand that character. Like, what was going on there? What was she just, was she a cop or was she more?
So it's like everybody's related in this town, apparently, because she's a cousin. She's John Candy cop's cousin.
Okay.
So, and John Candy is the grandson of the judge.
Yeah.
So
I, man. Well, first of all, whenever Taylor Negron, however, Negron, whenever he and his sister had lines, my brain shut off.
Sure.
Because it might as well have just been a high pitched squeal from what I couldn't understand what they were saying. It wasn't funny. The character designs were just downright terrible, I thought. You have John Candy in drag who doesn't say a word. So it's just meant for laughs.
Mm.
But it would have been funnier if he spoke, I thought, as the female, Eldona, right? Eldana?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, man. It's kind of mean-spirited, too, this movie. Like, I don't understand Chevy Chase's character. Is he a good guy? Is he a jerk?
I mean, I think it's hard for Chevy Chase to show being a good guy outside of Christmas Vacation. If he's not playing Clark Griswold, he doesn't really know how to not be an asshole.
Yeah, but like the beginning of the movie kind of frames him as this like this nice guy. You know, he treats people, he treats the doorman well, he treats Demi Moore well. I don't know if that's because he wants to get into her pants or not, but whatever.
Surely.
Yeah, but he seems like he's an okay guy. And then all of a sudden it's like he's drag racing cops.
Right.
Like where did this come from? Like, what is the point of these characters?
Right.
What are they?
And I will say there's only one moment from the foreign twin, the Brazilianaires, as they call them, that I disagree with you in terms of their words. It's when he goads Chevy Chase into racing the cop.
Okay.
Just for whatever, I like the energy that he brings to that moment, where he's just like, you don't have to stop. It's a local cop. Just chase him until you're out of your jurisdiction.
That's when he's like, just go for it, man. Just go for it. Turn left here. Turn left here. But why? Is it because they're millionaires? What's the point?
Yeah. I don't know what the point of this movie is.
Right.
It just feels like, I think a piece of this movie, not that it would make it any better or anything at all, but maybe a piece of this movie is stuck in time. Like maybe there's sort of slight cultural references of the early 90s they're making in terms of, you know, the New York City culture or whatever that they're commenting on, but being really bad about it, that we're just not getting because we were collectively 4 to 6 years old or however old right. we were when this movie came out. That's the only thing I could think of. I don't know. And you can tell me where you thought it fell off the tightrope in terms of comedy. Was it the whole shtick where he had the cigar in his mouth the entire opening, walking into the lobby, or when Demi Moore just started crying for no reason in the elevator?
For whatever reason, the cigar was something that I noticed. It felt like he was doing a Letterman thing.
Yeah.
Like, because Letterman's an asshole. And he would have been big around, like, with the cigar yeah. around this point. Yeah, that struck me as uncomfortable for whatever reason. And then she starts crying. Like, she seems like she's trying in this movie. She's yeah. fresh off Ghost, by the way. So, like, yeah. her big break was the movie before this one. So I feel bad for her in a way. But, yeah, oof. I hate Chevy Chase in this. I think a better... I don't even know who would be better in that role.
Nobody.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't think
just Bill Murray.
That's who I was thinking of. I don't even know if he can make this work. I think there needs to be a little more of an affable character actor in there, you know, someone a little more likable. Like if Dan Aykroyd had leading man looks.
Yeah. Yeah. Like maybe Jeff Goldblum's not a character actor, right. but he's very affable. He's, you know, everyone loves Jeff Goldblum. I don't know. I think Mark is right. This was kind of like pre Adam Sandler just giving his buddies a paycheck. Like, hey, let's go to Africa for 6 weeks and you'll get some money out of it. I think that's what Dan Aykroyd was doing. Like, hey, listen, you know, do you guys got anything going on? I have a script. Why not? Right.
I think it's probably closer to like the Star Wars prequels where Dan Aykroyd's like, I got this great script. And the studio's like, hey, here's some money. Because we trust you, because you've made classic comedies in the past. We trust you, and we're going to give you this amount of money, and we're probably not going to, you know, we're not going to butt our noses into it too much until, you know, we want to see a cut when you're ready, but, you know, go nuts. And he went nuts.
Yes, he did.
Yeah.
There was no script editor. It was like, hey, like a John Landis type or a... You know, that was just like, hey, maybe this doesn't work.
Yeah, there was no one there to say no.
Yeah.
There was never a movie I was more angry didn't have subtitles. Like that whole opening scene with the cigar from a person in my position was kind of incomprehensible because I couldn't really tell what Chevy Chase was saying sometimes in there. But yeah, just some of the stuff from Aykroyd's judge character, I couldn't really understand, so... Again, the fact that you guys didn't laugh or catch anything with that means I didn't miss anything.
Oh, yeah. It's not funny at all. No. I can tell you one thing. If this is supposed to be in comedy, strike 36. This was terrible. There was nothing landed. Nothing. No.
I checked out as soon as the big reveal of Aykroyd as the judge. I pretty much checked out of this movie. I'm like, that's so stupid. He looks awful. He acts way over the top. Mm-hmm. And it's not funny. Like he does like a hula, right? He does like a little hula dance. What, this guy's like geriatric. There's no he fought in World War I, he says.
Yeah.
There's zero chance that he's doing anything other than being dead.
Yeah,
that's what he should be.
They allude to that he has some kind of anti-aging or whatever thing, and that's why the brothers look the way they do and you know, he looks the way he does. But they never really explored that as much as I could tell. But then again, I zoned out probably around the time when the band showed up.
Digital Underground?
Yeah. That was probably the best part of the movie.
This is the highlight of the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was like, Shakur in there.
Tupac Shakur.
I was like, all right, it's pretty cool. And then I don't remember anything really right before that or right after that.
Yeah.
Except for so, the Hulk
guys. And it's Shock G, right?
Yep, Shock G, rest in peace.
Humpty Hump.
Humpty Hump, yeah. And what a weird, like a, sticking out like a sore thumb. Like, yep. Why is a rap group here?
And then, why is a rap group here? Why do we spend 5 minutes so they can perform a song? There's a musical interlude in the middle of this movie that is like 20 minutes away from being finished. Right. It's a good thing this movie doesn't have a plot. So.
Right. Like, yeah, like you lift it out, it really makes no difference whatsoever. But and then you have old man Aykroyd like jamming out with them.
Yeah.
Like, what the fuck are we doing here? And what is this?
This whole movie feels like Dan Aykroyd's trying to be Joe Dante. He's trying to make The Burbs. He's trying to make Gremlins. That's basically what it feels like.
I don't know what he was going for.
Like, you know what would make this better? You take Dan, put Aykroyd in behind the camera. Take him out of the movie entirely. Mm-hmm. Put Bruce Dern as the judge, and not and just no makeup, just as Bruce Dern himself.
Or even Brian Doyle Murray.
Yeah, I mean, I think Bruce Dern has the same natural energy that the judge is providing in this movie. I think Bruce Dern energy.
that's a pretty good pick. My pick would be I forget his name. He's Uncle Lewis in Christmas Vacation.
William Hickey.
William Hickey, yeah. That'd be hilarious. William Hickey as the judge. I would love that.
William Hickey, eternally 83 years old.
Right. Yeah. And for some reason, Baldwin shows up.
Daniel Baldwin. Everyone's favorite Baldwin.
I was going to say, mercifully, they kill off a Baldwin within like the first 2 minutes of his arrival. And that's my favorite part of the movie, to be honest.
So, Nothing But Trouble from 1991, directed by Dan Aykroyd, who may have done a couple of movies you've heard of, but he didn't direct any other movies you've heard of because this was his only directorial effort.
Probably luckily. Smart.
Yeah. Stars, Chevy Chase, Demi Moore, Dan Aykroyd, John Candy, Valerie Bromfield, Taylor Negron, Bertilla Damas, Raymond J. Barry, Brian Doyle Murray, John Wesley, Peter Aykroyd, and Daniel Baldwin, with special appearance by the Digital Underground. IMDb score 5.2, Rotten Tomatoes score 13%, budget $40 million, Jesus. Box office
$8.
$8. $8 million it made.
Oh man, so, that $40 million was just half Chevy Chase's salary.
Yeah.
Probably. Yeah. Real quick before we move on, I think it's kind of like a mortal sin to have this kind of cast and to just waste it so badly.
Mm-hmm.
Like John Candy died 3 years later.
Yeah.
And it's just like, this is one of, I don't know how many movies he made between 91 and 93. I'm sure he made a few, but like, oh man, like it's too close to his death, you know, like that. Yeah. That's too close, and that's kind of sad.
Right. It was so close to his Welcome to Mooseport, right?
Yeah, right.
All right, you guys want to get in the plot?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, Dan, what you got for us?
All right, just going to give a quick shout-out to our friend Tia and her podcast, The Top 10 with Tia. So that's a weekly podcast where Tia and her co-host, Brittany, get together, and they discuss top 10 lists. So go check them out. Go give them a follow. You can follow her at TC_Stark on Twitter, and she is also the head writer for Geek Vibes Nation, with whom we are affiliated with. So, again, go check her out. Give her a follow.
Okay, great. And we are going to take a break, and you are going to listen to some messages from friends of the podcast. So we will be right back.
Hey, this is Ken M.
Padawan Jay.
Coach Duffy.
From the Ocho Duro Parlay Hour podcast. Every week, the ODPH is talking sports, movies, TV, comics, and more. It's always a parlay of topics on each episode. You can find the ODPH on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Stitcher, Podbean, and wherever you find great podcasts, such as the one you're listening to right now. Don't forget to check out OchoDuroParlayHour.com, where you can find the links to all of the ODPH social media accounts, links to the bands whose music you hear each week on the show, hashtag 607 podcast info, and parlay points, our companion blog section of the show. Thanks for listening to the ODPH. Now get back to your regularly scheduled podcast.
Welcome, travelers. It seems like you're looking for a story. Well, I got one for you. It involves adventure, friendship, and all sorts of...
Earl, why don't you tell him about that time I stole that big-ass melon?
Yeah, yeah, I was going for more...
Or you could tell him about the time I kicked your ass, Earl.
I wouldn't ever tell him.
Do I need to get my ref gear on?
Okay, everyone, shut up. Now come with me as I tell you a story from afar.
Hey, everybody. My name's David. I'm the DM for From Afar Podcast. From Afar Podcast is all about four friends separated by distance, but brought together by adventure. Hope you all stop by and give us a listen. Thanks.
And welcome back. And now it's time to get into the plot for Nothing But Trouble. We open on shots of the New York City skyline as credits roll, set to The Good Life by Ray Charles, playing lots of shots of the World Trade Center. Just like to point that out. Yeah. We settle upon a fancy New York apartment building as a doorman opens the door to a cab to let Chevy Chase out. Chase, doing some sort of David Letterman thing with a huge cigar sticking out of his mouth, he's playing Chris Thorne, a financial advisor slash columnist that has his own financial periodical. So, an asshole, basically. I don't know why there's so much made about how he's not a financial advisor. He's in financial publishing. It's such a thing that's made such a big thing about it, and it just falls so completely flat like the rest of this movie.
He's not a banker.
Yeah, but doesn't matter to Dan Aykroyd anyway.
Yeah.
Chris apparently is having a party in his apartment, even though he doesn't seem to want to be having this party. As he waits for an elevator, he comes across Diane Lightson, a neighbor with a couple of dogs, played by Demi Moore.
She has a name. I didn't even realize that.
She does. Diane. He tries to start small talk with her, and she immediately starts to sob uncontrollably in the elevator. She notices a manila folder with someone's name on it and a reference to some sort of land deal. So she freaks out and grabs it and storms off the elevator, leaving him with her espresso maker. She goes to her apartment and tries to call up the firm behind the land deal. And we find out that she's not only the lawyer for the guy that name was on the folder, but also possibly an ex. She can't get a hold of him, and he's in Atlantic City. So she goes down to Chris's apartment and talks to him about the guy on the folder, Howard Luntz. She asks him if he's going to meet over the land deal. He says he doesn't plan to. So she says, let me borrow your car and drive down to Atlantic City. Again, they just met 5 minutes ago.
Yeah. But, you know, it's New York. Things like this happen.
And
you
guys live there,
you know. You drove random strangers' cars while you were in New York all the time, right?
Yeah. Sure. Again, several good-looking women would always approach me in Manhattan. Like, I need to borrow your mode of transportation. Like, well, absolutely, young lady.
Here's my bus pass.
And I don't know if you've already mentioned them, but they were brother-sister? I thought they were husband-wife.
They're brother-sister, yep.
Okay. I don't know what joke we were missing. Well, we're missing a lot of jokes in this movie, total. But the whole fact of them just jumping into conversations, I don't know what that was supposed to be like a reference to.
I think they're just being annoying. I think that's the joke.
I think one of the stereotypes is Brazilian people are clingy. Is that what it is? I don't know. Those Brazilians.
So he reconsiders and says that maybe he'll go down there with her and he could drive her. Then a couple of Brazilian millionaires that they call Brazilianaires invite themselves on the trip too. And then Diane leaves, and in the morning, a hungover Chris goes into the parking lot. He tells his doorman to tell Diane that he's sick and he can't go on with her, and he'll let her take the car. But then she steps off the elevator, and both he and the doorman ogle her, and he immediately changes his mind and decides to drive her down. Chevy Chase is 19 years older than her, by the way.
Yeah, and this was at the point where Chevy Chase was still bagging, like, smoking hot ladies when, you know, like, realistically, I don't think at this point in his career, Chevy Chase was going to be getting that. We all know how much of a jerk he was.
Yeah.
So I think this was kind of written in to help him, like, oh, yeah, like, your ego. We're helping your ego out here. Like, of course you could get Demi Moore. Why wouldn't you?
Yeah. I think he's almost 50 at this point, too.
Wow, really?
Chevy Chase. I think he was born in 1942. Let me investigate.
Yeah, and the whole point of this is at no point, not that I was expecting it from this, but I don't see any reason outside of the very end or near the very end that she would want anything to do with him,
right?
Short of just needing his car.
Mm-hmm.
Like the falling in love part, like there's never really a moment that occurs outside of him saving her life.
She, you know? All of a sudden, like, she has this weird character arc where she's, you know, she wants to drive down to Atlantic City to give this guy a piece of her mind. And then she gets like super horny for Chevy Chase out of nowhere.
Yep.
They don't share a connection.
Nope. He just slings platitudes at her about, you know, plenty of people fall for the wrong guy and a right guy is going to come along and, you know, you're too good for him anyway, blah, blah, blah. And then she just makes out with him.
Yeah. And that's another thing. I got so tired so quickly of like the quips from Chevy Chase, his little smart antic remarks. Usually, I mean, that's just his shtick. You know, he's very fast with his remarks in his movies. And here, I don't think it's his fault. I think it's the writing.
Yeah.
Here, his comebacks are just really they're not well written, and they don't land.
Yeah.
A lot of them are just like super mean spirited.
Yeah. I think there's a tone problem too. I think overall this movie has a tone problem. And I think that's part of it, that it leads into that of just him making these quips as they're like running for their lives in the junkyard as everything is collapsing. It's like hilarious. Yeah, this is perfect time to make that joke.
Yeah, exactly. There's a lot of moments in this movie that would get that explanation.
So just as they're about to leave the garage, the Brazilians show up ready to go on the trip. So then they're off on the beautiful New Jersey Turnpike, which looks like it hasn't changed in 30 years. The Brazilians announced that they plan a surprise picnic and they would like to stop somewhere a little more scenic than the New Jersey Turnpike. While Chris protests, Diane finds a magical road that crosses the Delaware into Pennsylvania and then crosses back without taking them out of their way too much, which might be the Northeast Extension. I'm not sure. So they go off the New Jersey Turnpike and wind up in the Pennsylvania countryside. And they come into the village of Valkenvania. And it's a rundown town with bikers and lower-income people sitting on their porch. This was actually the same set used for the film High Noon. Valkenvania was modeled after Centralia. A hint on the mine fire that's going on underneath. While in town, Chris makes a turn without stopping at a stop sign, and it gets the attention of a local police cruiser who's in pursuit. As the cop pursues, Fausto, the Brazilian, goads Chris into not stopping, saying he's a provincial cop and that Chris could outrun him in his BMW. What Chris doesn't expect is the cop has a little extra power in the cruiser and is able to keep pace, and also has the ability to create detours with a flick of a switch.
He's got the nitro.
Yeah. It's like, is that Black Sheep?
Yeah.
The nitro boosters.
The nitro boosters and Fast and Furious, right? If I'm not mistaken. Yeah,
the early version of NOS.
The Nas, yeah. Just flick the switch. That's the first thing I thought of. It was like Vin Diesel in Nothing But Trouble.
Yeah, yeah. This whole thing felt like this whole chase sequence was just people in a room going, all right, what kind of crazy things could he have that he could control with the car? No need to explain how he can control all these things. It's just old style dials. You say, magic.
It's like the Batmobile.
By people in a room, you mean Dan Aykroyd talking to himself.
Right? And Peter Aykroyd, apparently, right? That's his brother.
Yeah.
His brother's got a story by credit.
Yeah.
What was the movie with Hulk Hogan, No Holds Barred, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
With him and Vince McMahon just hold up.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
At Parker, our purpose is simple. We want to make the world a better place. By working more efficiently, by using more sustainable practices, by developing better technologies, we keep moving forward. With each new idea, innovation, and partnership, we're one step closer to fulfilling our purpose every single day. To find out more, visit parker.com/purpose. Parker, engineering your success.
Been a hotel room doing
for 72 hours.
A mountain of cocaine.
Yeah.
Do you think Dan Aykroyd and his brother just did something similar?
The Crystal Skull vodka.
You're right. Just getting fucking blitzed. And then I dress up as an old man with no nose on. No, it's hilarious.
I mean, if Chevy was in that room, you know there'd be coke.
Oh, copious amounts.
Yeah, just for Chevy.
Right. Get your own cocaine.
All those drugs in that one scene with the Baldwin is all just Chevy's drugs.
Right, yeah. He was the prop department that day. Oh, I got coke in the car.
Yeah, don't worry. I got you guys. That scene drove me nuts. Because he keeps mentioning poppers and Weezers and pills. And he just keeps saying it over and over again. Like, oh, my
Grinders.
God. Grinders, yes.
Yeah.
Isn't that a sandwich, a grinder?
Yeah.
I think he means, like, I was picturing, like, something you would grind, like, marijuana down to smoke, to put into something and smoke.
Allegedly. We have no idea.
Yeah, I mean, do they do that? Are there things that for grinding down marijuana into finer?
Guys, it's legal where we are.
It's true.
It's okay. No, you can do this. Oh, not you, Mark. You're on the wrong side of the line, my friend.
Yeah. This pursuit means absolutely nothing. This high-speed chase means nothing because John Candy doesn't even bring it to the attention of the judge.
That's right. He drops it.
Yeah. Which I understand, I guess, because John Candy is supposed to, he's like not really in with the whole judge's dealings. He kind of doesn't really seem to like it, which is weird in terms of his arc.
Yeah.
Like, you think he'd come back and rescue them?
No, he doesn't.
Or just like put a bow on that kind of arc is like where he's like fighting with the judge. Like, you really didn't have to do that. They're just there for blowing a stop sign. You could just let them go. And then he just leaves.
So, and then that brings up a good question. Why, if you realize you don't like what's happening, why bring them in at all?
Right. Yeah. That's a good question.
Yeah.
He knows it's a kind of a trumped up charge. What, he ran a stop sign. All right. Write him a ticket.
Right. Yeah. Just let him go.
Yeah.
Or maybe he has to do that. He makes reference to, you know, doing his job well or whatever.
His arc is that he's like a straight laced cop. But still, I don't, it seems half assed in terms of the him defying the judge and not agreeing with his motives and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Right. I just hate the overall arc of it being the judge hates bankers.
Yeah.
Because he brings in other people who are not bankers.
Sure.
So, Jimmy Hoffa. Yeah, Jimmy Hoffa is not a banker. Like, it's a cute nod to the great mystery of where Jimmy Hoffa is. I get that, but it spits in the, not spits, but it flies in the face of the judge has it out for bankers.
Right.
Like, he has it out for everybody except for Digital Underground.
Yeah. The only evidence of anybody ever getting out of that house alive.
Right. Which I thought was kind of progressive. I was like, I don't know. Are they going to kill the group of black people here? I don't know. I don't know how this is going to look. And I, for a minute, I thought he was just like, oh, they're black. I'm going to kill them. I thought they were going to do that. Like, oh, okay. This is going to turn out okay. Awkward, but okay.
I wonder, like, I would love to know the moment where Dan Aykroyd became aware of Digital Underground. It just doesn't fit his kind of persona. No,
not at all. You could kind of tell Chevy Chase is also he's sitting there like, what? I don't know what this is. This music frightens me.
Yeah. He looks like he was happy to try and sexually harass the girls with them.
Right.
Yeah.
The minute I'm out of these handcuffs, I'm groping you.
Something I'm used to doing.
Right. to be fair, those women in Digital Underground were quite fine.
They were.
Yeah.
Yep.
They were tens.
Yeah. And they were like 20 years old. So Chevy Chase at 48 at the time of filming this was quite happy with that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That was the best day of shooting, he said.
Yeah. So they wind up on some sort of service access road with a bunch of dump trucks. They try to pass some trucks and wind up nearly missing some oncoming traffic. Eventually, they come upon another cruiser positioned in a roadblock with another officer pointing a machine gun right at them and are forced to stop. Cop is played by John Candy and asks him to step out of the car. So after a pat down, the officer tells Chris that he initially pursued him because he failed to stop at a stop sign, and he will overlook the other charges, including speeding, if he cooperates and follows him to the courthouse. Follow him to the courthouse in what appears to be some sort of private junkyard. Grounds are filled with junk, abandoned metal, among a bunch of different things. They finally make it to the courthouse and go inside, and the inside is even more chaotic. There's a whole bunch of shit just all over the place. Like I said, the seems like the production designer had a fun time making this movie, but nobody else did. The rat party was probably like the one person that was so excited. Like, this was a great time, guys. Everybody else was just sad.
So this is going to further my career so much.
At least the check cleared.
The courthouse and the surrounding area sort of reminds me of a House of a Thousand Corpses Texas Chainsaw feel.
This movie is very Texas Chainsaw Massacre-y.
Yeah. You know what? Before you mentioned horror comedy, I just thought this is straight up comedy. I didn't realize that, yeah, they're trying to go for a little bit of a horror take.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's how bad this movie is. It, like, it doesn't convey what it's really trying to go for.
Yeah. I'm just trying to I was looking for real quick at Chevy Chase's career around this point.
Was he kind of like on the downward slope?
He was 2 years after Christmas Vacation.
Okay. Yeah, Christmas Vacation was late 80s, right? 89, 90?
Yeah, 89.
89.
Yeah.
So
Memoirs of an Invisible Man came out the next year.
Probably not great. Yeah. I've never heard of that movie. Yeah, I don't know. I think, to me, Chase kind of phoned it in this one. Mm-hmm. Like, Aykroyd is giving it his best. Demi's giving it her best. Or, you know, like, she's trying. Yeah. Aykroyd's really trying. And Chevy's just kind of running through the motions.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's like, oh, I get to kiss Demi Moore? Awesome. Sign me
right.
up.
Right. Well, at this point, I don't think Demi Moore was how we think of Demi Moore now.
It was she was part of the Brat Pack, man.
So what was it? She started in, was she in 16 Candles or no?
Yeah, St. Elmo's Fire.
St. Elmo's Fire, that's what it was. So, okay. Yeah, so she had a few films under her belt then. Okay.
I mean, her big one was Ghost. It was before Ghost. This.
Right. But she wasn't like, in Ghost, she wasn't sexy, was she?
I mean,
she's a grieving woman. That's not.
I mean, there's the whole pottery scene.
Sure, but that's the one scene, and it's really super corny.
I mean, I'm not Ghost's prime demographic, but I'm assuming that some women were jilling off in the theaters to that scene.
Well, that's more Patrick Swayze.
Well, sure.
I mean, who hasn't?
Right. We're just red-blooded Americans over here. Yeah, I don't know. I didn't think Demi Moore had reached that level of sex icon yet, you know?
I mean, this was pre-Indecent Proposal and Disclosure, sure.
Yeah.
But there was Ghost, We're No Angels, The Seventh Sign, Wisdom, One About Crazy Summer, Night. About Last Night, Same Elmo's Fire, Blame It on Rio.
Blame It on Rio. That was the other one I was trying to think of.
I've never seen those movies, so I'm not sure. I'm not sure what her sex appeal in those movies was.
This is before she's fucking older men, so maybe she was like in Indecent Proposal and Disclosure specifically.
Well, Indecent Proposal is with Robert Redford.
Yeah, I mean that's like Robert Redford too.
Sure. Yeah, I mean
for $1 million, right?
He's aged perfectly fine.
Yeah.
Yeah, this was the movie. This was the year right before she had the three straight breakouts.
Okay.
With A Few Good Men, Indecent Proposal, and Disclosure.
Yeah.
You know, back to back to back. Then The Scarlet Letter, and then she becomes Demi Moore from there, you know.
She blossoms into Demi Moore.
You know,
at that point, she's married to Bruce Willis, right?
Yeah. Yeah. G.I. Jane.
Oh, G.I. Jane. Okay, so again, she's good in this. But I think this, to me, it was kind of like, oh, this is where she's starting to really blossom as, like we were saying, Demi Moore.
Yeah. She's lucky she had a career after this.
Yeah, that's a good point, because this was a movie that should have killed some careers.
Yeah. It killed Dan Aykroyd's directing career, that's for sure.
Nothing really lost there.
So the house looks like an old house, but there's also a courtroom in it. John Candy calls upon the Justice of the Peace, Judge Valkenheiser. And some fanfare plays as the judge pops up in some sort of automated chair from below the floor. Judge presides, looks over the IDs, and while Diane tries to flatter the judge, Chris acts like a dick, but then randomly tries to light up a cigar in the middle of the proceedings for no reason. So the judge decides they need to be held on to for a while until the next afternoon. They fall through a trapdoor and land on a pile of stuffed animals, I guess.
Yeah, I don't know. It's like Beanie Babies almost.
I don't know. And down in the weird holding cell, they all fight and Diane punches Chris right in the face. As we all wanted to do once in our life, is to punch Chevy Chase.
Yes.
Me, if I had a genie, that would be one of my wishes. I want
to punch Chevy. To punch Chevy Chase?
Just once.
Well, all right, so Chevy Chase now or Chevy Chase like in, you know, the 90s?
I'll say if I could punch, if I have the option to punch Nothing But Trouble era Chevy Chase, that would be, yeah. I don't want to be up in arms on me punching out an octogenarian.
Right. Yeah, I don't want to punch old man Chase here, you know, just possibly kill him.
I mean, but though, he does kind of deserve it as Pierce in Community.
Oh, that's a good point. That's a good point. But still, I don't know. Something about punching an old man just doesn't sit well with me. You like punching younger people, and that's perfectly fine.
Yeah. I'll punch children. I'm okay with it. Yeah.
Right. That's your thing, and you know what? We're not here to judge. I just don't want to punch an old man.
Well, these are the rules that you've decided to live your life by.
I'll never know the joy of punching a young person.
Meanwhile, the officer, Dennis, and the judge argue over the treatment of the four of them. Later, a bunch of drunks speed down the highway and wind up getting pulled over by Dennis. They get brought before by the judge, and he confiscates their drugs. Meanwhile, they're besides themselves laughing at everything the judge says, including when he mentions that he's going to put them to death. So he activates a conveyor belt, which drags the drunks and their girls outside into a roller coaster called the Bone Stripper, which does exactly that. One of these drunks also being played by Daniel Baldwin, everyone's favorite Baldwin. The roller coaster leads to some sort of meat grinder, which then spits out the bones at the other end. Meanwhile, the female cop comes to the holding cell to bring Chris, Diane, and the other two up for supper. They sit at a long table in a shockingly nice dining room. The judge comes down in his chair suspended from the ceiling. Then he passes around a can of Hawaiian punch for all of them to drink. And then ants on the log, too, as an appetizer. And then John Candy and Drag comes down and the judge introduces her as his granddaughter, Eldona. And Dennis is her brother, so I guess I missed that Dennis was related to the judge, but I suppose it makes sense. The judge says she's a hell of a mechanic.
I made the connection, maybe it was later than this, maybe I zoned out and missed it, but when he said that he's been working for the judge since he was 8 years old, at one point I was like, well, this is either a child labor situation or they're all the same family here.
Gotcha. I think I missed that part. And they all joke about how Chris and Eldona would become a perfect couple, and then Eldona goes to prepare the meal. Chris mentions how the judge has a lot of steel on his property and he should sell it to the Japanese to make Toyotas. The judge flips out about the suggestion and he talks about back during World War I, a banker conned his grandfather into parsing out the land to strip the property of coal in exchange for stocks that wound up being worthless and basically caused that mine fire that is still burning to this day. And then dinner is served, grotesque, gray-looking, quote-unquote, hot dogs, which... Is the Bone Stripper making these hot dogs? The cannibalism possibility was never brought up in this movie?
I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, I would go out on a limb and say that that's a possibility, sure.
Right. That's Daniel Baldwin they're all about to chow down on.
Yeah, that makes me feel better.
And there's also a model train on the table that passes around the condiments, and the judge eats while everyone else just watches. There's one thing about... thing I hate when movies are just trying to be gross.
Mm-hmm.
Like when people just eat and they're very greasy when they eat, you know, it just gets all over. Ugh.
Yeah, like the mustard's all over them and like stuff is squirting out. Yeah, it's not I get what they're going for, right? They're going for the gross out factor, but it's not really, I don't know, it adds nothing to the movie. Mm-hmm. Like we know these characters are gross. We can see that.
Yeah.
They're pretty much inbred. So, yeah, I don't really need to know that they also eat disgustingly.
And then the ground shakes and the judge mentions that it's an underground mine fire that's been burning for decades. Eventually, Fausto flips out and decides it's time for him and his sister to leave. So the female cop holds an Uzi to them, so they decide to jump out the window and run away. cops chase after them, and Chris and Diane try to make their own escape, but the judge manages to bar the door, and Aldana grabs them both by the neck and locks them in a bedroom. Fausto and his sister have to wade through a disgusting moat as the female cop chases after them with some dogs. As they get to the other side of the moat, Dennis is there with a gun to retrieve them, but after some discussion and some bribery, he decides that he's going to help them get out of there. And in the bedroom, Chris talks to Diane about how she shouldn't worry about picking the wrong guy because it happens to everyone and she'll find the right guy eventually and she's too good for that guy. So then she makes out with him until she decides that she can't because he is nothing but trouble. And that's the name of the movie.
Hey!
They did it.
Yeah. And maybe we've driven this into the ground, but the sheer fact that Chevy Chase delivers these lines and still sounds extremely creepy when he's probably not supposed to be that way.
Sure. Yeah. Again, he's almost 50 in this movie.
Yeah.
There's nothing sincere about him in this movie, really.
Yeah.
I don't think there's been anything ever sincere from him, right?
There
is sincerity in the Vacation movies.
Yeah, like maybe early on in his career there was some sincerity, but he got too big and all of that really kind of flew out the window.
Yeah. Like, he's still doing his character from Caddyshack, really.
Sure. I think that's a good comparison.
As they sleep, Chris spoons Diane, which someone watches from the other side of a portrait. So they set off a contraption that spins the bed really fast. And then the bedroom door opens up, and Chris and Diane try to manage an escape. They walk out into the hallway and find a series of ridiculous rooms, including a room full of dolls, a room full of bats, and then a headstone. And then the wall starts closing in on them and nearly crushes them to death. Before Ken, Chris manages to break open the last door and pull Diane inside. They find a stairway that leads to an attic. As they stumble inside, a safe rolls down a track and blocks the door they came in. As they inspect the room, they see the walls covered in a century's worth of newspaper clippings about missing persons, each in an ID to go with them. So basically, they're killing all these people, including Jimmy Hoffa, an ex-Nazi scientist, and a bunch of bankers. And someone flips a switch and a doorway opens to reveal a slide. We never actually get to find out officially who is doing all this, right?
I'm assuming it's the granddaughter.
Right.
I think it's John Candy.
So this is what I can't figure out is why they're doing it, what the motivation is, because it could be either of them. If it's to get them crushed by that wall, then it's probably Aldana, right?
Yeah.
But if it's someone that's actually trying to help them, then it's John Candy. But I can't tell what they're trying to accomplish with these switches.
That's a good point. For some reason, I thought it was John Candy trying to help them escape, but they never really escape.
Yeah, and I thought it was Aldana because she caught them in bed together, so she got jealous.
Right. Yep.
Oh, that's a good motivation. One.
But the hand that's working it has like a blue sleeve that looks like a cop's uniform.
And I think you hear John Candy's like voiceover, like "Good luck, Slick."
Yeah.
That's what. Yep. I was like, oh, it's John Candy. So I don't know, but it could go either way.
Mm-hmm.
Because this movie sucks.
Once again, because he doesn't come back to help them at the end.
No. Yeah.
Wait, where does he go?
He goes down to Brazil.
Oh, he does.
Yeah.
Oh, so he just fucks off and leaves.
Yeah, he leaves with Fausto and his sister. He winds up fucking Fausto's sister. She calls him her lover, and he becomes like their head of security.
I didn't know that. Did I miss that? I must have.
Did you not watch the rest of the movie?
No, I saw the entire thing, I thought.
You must have not. It's like the very end. It's like one of the three endings.
Oh, no. I stopped as soon as Chevy Chase did that outlandishly cartoonish running through the wall.
Well, that's the end.
Yes.
And then I think it happens in between when they get on the train and when they get to the cops. I think there's a scene in between there.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I think so. Yeah.
God, that ending. And that's just another, like, that's a super phoned in ending.
Yep.
With Chevy Chase saying, "No, you won't." Like, oh, that's what you ended on? With him saying, "No, you won't." That's not funny.
That's a great ADR line.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. God damn it, this movie. God damn it. I desperately want to try to like say something funny about this, and there's just nothing.
Yeah. So someone flips a switch, and the doorway opens to reveal a slide. So they go down it and wind up getting split up. Diane goes down one slide while Chris goes down another. Diane falls down into the dirt outside while Chris gets stuck in the slide and winds up behind the wall to the judge's room, which he can see in and watches as the judge gets ready for bed, including taking off his hair and his nose, which is a penis.
Yes.
I did forget to put that in my notes. There's like one, there's several shots where his nose is obviously a penis, but it's not always though, which is also weird.
So now wait a minute. It's made of a penis or it just looks like a penis?
Well, I mean, you'll have to ask Dan Aykroyd, but it looks like a penis.
Okay. Wow. That's so dumb.
Yeah. So Diane winds up in some sort of junkyard. She finds the BMW, which has been stripped. She tries to call 911 on the sat phone, but the 911 doesn't work on the sat phone. Then she hears voices coming from a part of the junkyard and goes to investigate. And she comes across giant diaper babies, two mutated-looking, almost bratwurst-looking man babies wearing only diapers and the intelligence of developmentally challenged toddlers. And they're just fucking sweaty.
It's like Tweedledee and Tweedledum, essentially, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Oh, God. Another thing that really doesn't need to be in this movie.
Nope. She catches their attention. They chase after her, but Aldana grabs her and sets to throw her into a fire. But these diaper monsters convince Aldana to leave Diane with them so they can play with her. And then Diane faints.
It would have been cool if they threw her in the fire.
That would have been ballsy.
Yeah. Someone needed to die other than Daniel Baldwin.
And he definitely needed to die.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It's a foregone conclusion. That deserved to happen, but yeah.
I wonder if Daniel Baldwin, like, other than having the last name, obviously, I wonder if he had been in anything semi-noteworthy and tried to convince Dan Aykroyd to not kill off his character. Like, I think there was potential here, Dan. Like, yeah. No, you're dying. I will hear nothing but you dying in this movie. I'm writing this specifically so you die, with you in mind. You're perfect for this role.
Yeah. He wasn't born on the 4th of July at this point.
That's Tom Cruise, right?
And as vet number one.
Oh, okay. So, there you go. I mean, that's a pretty big movie, I'd say.
Yeah.
Then again, just the pedigree, obviously,
yeah,
lends itself. But, yeah, I think there needed to be a higher body count other than Daniel Baldwin.
Sure. As the judge sleeps, the female cop jumps on the radio to announce she's bringing in a couple of speeders to see the judge. And for some reason, it's the Digital Underground in a hearse, no less. The judge goes down to preside over the court in his automated chair, and Chris stumbles out of the hole in the wall of the judge's bedroom. He searches for the room for a weapon and fails to see the judge come back up, and they have a fight. The judge pulls a blade on Chris, and Chris only has some bones to protect them. They stumble around the room for a while, stepping in bedpans and knocking things over until Chris is able to get to the door and run out. But he runs right into Aldana and she grapples him. And the judge says that running into Aldana counts as making advances on her, and that means house policy is that they now have to get married. So Aldana picks up Chris and carries him off. And then the judge goes back down to the courtroom to preside over the Digital Underground's trial. They were speeding. The judge looks over the IDs and finds out they're musicians, so he orders them to bring in their music instruments and for inspection. Meanwhile, Aldana has Chris chained on a chair in her room, and she dresses behind a screen. And then the female cop orders him out, saying that Aldana can't see Chris before the wedding. Diane is still in the junkyard in a cage playing cards with the diaper babies.
You know what? I was just thinking. So Aldana, John Candy in drag as Aldana, doesn't say a word in this movie. Don't you think it would have been funnier if he, as Aldana, sounds exactly like John Candy, the cop?
Sure.
Like he doesn't try to go for a feminine voice. It's just literally John Candy as in drag.
Sure.
I just think that would have been funnier. I don't know why that popped in my head just now, but like just like when he's changing behind like the screen when he's getting dressed behind there, like just thinking of John Candy saying like, "What do you think of this?" and like, "Oh, like I know you're getting anxious, lover boy," or something like that. It would have been so much funnier than just him going
right.
That's the only noise he makes as Aldana. Just weird
Yeah. Meanwhile, the Digital Underground performs same song in the courtroom, while the judge accompanies on the organ. This is Tupac's feature film debut, by the way.
Yep.
After the performance, the judge waives all the charges facing the Digital Underground, but he says that he might need their help with some more proceedings. The judge takes Chris aside, talks about how he wants him to marry his granddaughter, even though it seems like this is going to happen regardless. I don't know why they have to have this conversation. And then the wedding starts with the Digital Underground performing the wedding march and acting as witnesses too, I suppose. And then Aldana and Chris both say, "I do." Chris says it, "I do," at gunpoint. And then Digital Underground makes a break for it, goes to leave before the judge changes his mind. And then Chris tries to leave with them. And the judge gets pissed off at his attitude and tells him he's not family material, so then sends him down to the bone stripper. As he begs for his life on the bone stripper, as he's almost stripped from his bones, the bone stripper breaks down and he winds up going out the chute in one piece.
You gotta say bone stripper more often, I think.
Bone stripper. I think this is the last time for the bone stripper. Sorry.
Yes, it is. Yeah.
And he runs off. Meanwhile, we see Dennis, who has disappeared for the last half of this film, packing a bag. And then we cut back to the junkyard where Aldana is preparing a three-bladed guillotine. They're prepared to put Diane on this, but the judge decides to give Diane a chance, so he goes on the police radio to call out for Chris. If he comes down and takes Diane's place, he'll spare Diane's life. So while the judge counts down to get Chris to come out, Chris finds a barrel of gas, which he lights with his jacket used as a fuse, and rolls it into a bunch of other ones, and then they all explode, causing the diaper babies to... and Aldana and the judge to run for cover. This gives Chris a chance to rescue Diane, and he puts her out of the way of the blades, just as the blades fall down when they were before. And then they make a break for it. They get chased as they head for the train. They manage to jump on the train at the last minute, even with the female cop shooting at them as they do so.
Yeah, she's not a very good shot.
No, she doesn't hit. She shoots off a lot of rounds in this movie, and she doesn't hit a damn thing. So this is the scene where we see in fabulous Brazil or something, the Fausto and his sister have now hired Dennis as their head of security. Meanwhile, Chris and Diane go to the cops, and the cops tell them they need to go back and give proper ID of the judge. So they go back to the house with the state attorney general, the National Guard, and a whole shitload of cops, and the cops call out the judge to issue the warrant. He doesn't come out, so Chris and Diane go up to knock on the door. They seem really much too involved in this process. And when he comes out to the door, he pretends he doesn't know who they are. But all the cops know the judge, and they're all real friendly-like. So the attorney general basically says that they like the judge's way of doing things, but they can't admit to it. So they're threatened by Chris and Diane knowing all this. So they need to do something about it. And just then, the mine fire erupts, and the house starts to collapse.
Hey, Cap.
And I was thinking to myself, there are some cops there, and I know for a fact some of them would not play along with that. There's basically what I'm saying is like there's like the black cops are there, like we're not playing along with this like weird inbred shit. Like that's all you guys. We're not touching that.
It is weird that the state attorney general is in on it.
Yeah, like why would they be in on it? It makes no sense. That's like weird, creepy shit.
Yeah.
They wouldn't have fallen for that.
Like, if it was like localized, like they wound up at the local police station, I could see it because they're all probably related. But yeah, now that you're getting like elected officials involved on a state level, it's like, okay, this is a little unbelievable.
Right.
There are giant diaper babies in this movie.
That giant diaper baby sounds like such a weird euphemism.
Great band name, though.
Yes, that's our D&D name. Giant diaper babies.
So everyone runs for it, and Chris finds his BMW, which he's able to start because he knows there's a fuel shutoff switch that is part of the security system. They drive back to New York with a half-stripped BMW as the house collapses. Back in his apartment, Chris awakens from a nightmare that he was having while taking a nap, and Diane is there to assure him that he's okay. Oh, so this is like second ending, basically. This is Lord of the Rings, basically. So... I guess it's almost three, right? The first is when they first leave the house.
Yeah.
And then the second one is when they come back to the house.
Yeah.
And then the third one is now in New York, right?
Yes.
So he wakes up from a nightmare, and she assures him that it's all okay, and she's going to go take a shower. So he decides to watch TV and catches a news report of the mine fire. And the news interviews the judge and says he's going to move in with his new grandson-in-law in New York City. So Chris runs through the wall like Wile E. Coyote.
It might be my least favorite ending I've ever seen in a movie.
Yep. And that's the last image we see of this movie. That's the end of Nothing But Trouble. What a piece of shit.
It's a really bad movie.
Yeah. Again, we have to talk to our friend and just like let him know that, you know, don't recommend movies anymore, man.
Thanks for ruining our week.
Well, listen, obviously the whole point of this podcast is to review bad movies.
Yeah.
We try to have fun with them. Like we don't purposely try to torture ourselves. You know, right. Like, sometimes it's unavoidable because we might find a movie like, oh, this looks like fun. and it just turns out to be a big slog fest. But this one, oh man, like, we were told it was bad, mm-hmm. and it's bad.
Yeah, we didn't know how bad.
Right. There should be a warning on this movie, like a Surgeon General. Hey, proceed at your own caution, man, because this movie is a piece of shit.
There's a warning. It says directed by Dan Aykroyd.
Yeah.
Well, hey, I mean, Dan Aykroyd's a funny guy. And it's a good cast. It's a very good cast. John Candy's hilarious. Not in this.
No.
But Chevy Chase is funny.
As much as he's an asshole, he has been funny.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, you can't hold it against him that he's a huge asshole.
Well, you can.
You can. Yeah. That doesn't
mean but you got to begrudgingly also say, okay, he has been funny.
Right. Right. Yeah, you got to give we got to give him his due.
Yeah.
But wow, just like, he's not trying in it. Aykroyd's over trying. Demi Moore's doing her best. The Brazilian brother and sister are just, they might as well have just been speaking Portuguese, because I couldn't understand a word they were saying. I didn't care what they were saying. I hated them. I hated the diaper babies. I hated this movie. I hate everything.
Yeah. It's so weird that they escaped too, right?
Yeah.
The Brazilians. Why? Shouldn't they have died somehow?
Yeah. They should have been ran down by the dogs.
Or they come back with the National Guard.
But I mean, I guess because of their characteristics, they're very
selfish. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I get them not coming back, but they definitely should have died.
Right.
Like, you set it up for them to die.
Yeah. But like, if they come back with the National Guard, you could play into the part where they mention that they have diplomatic immunity.
Right. I remember that. Yeah, but I don't know. That's a wasted opportunity, I think, right?
Yeah. I think this whole movie's a wasted opportunity.
Well, it's a waste of talent, for sure, as I've been saying. It's just, goddamn, man.
Yeah.
Again, I didn't laugh. I didn't even smile.
Nope.
I feel like I really could have. I probably smiled more like Schindler's List. At least there was there's a couple points in Schindler's List where, like, oh man, there's like some humanity there. It makes me smile. This is nothing.
Yep. No humanity in this movie.
No.
Nope.
It's just abandon all hope, ye who watch this movie.
All right. That's all I have to say about this piece of shit movie. You guys want to plug your shit?
Mark, did you have anything left to say? It's been summed up. All right. So. My personal Twitter at DAquino122. I also tweet from Stranger Damies, our Real Play D&D podcast. So if you're looking for where to listen or where we stream, just check out that Twitter account and you'll get all the info there. And that's it for me.
Yeah. So as you mentioned, our D&D podcast, Stranger Damies, there's episodes every other Wednesday. Most importantly, we've switched to basically streaming, which is the main way people have been catching us. So we do stream a full session, about 2 to 3 hours, every other Friday at 8 p.m. So be sure to check that out. And then you can follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Stranger Damies. And then the streaming all takes place on twitch.tv/GameVaultPod. And the Game Vault podcast is our gaming podcast that airs every other Monday. As Ant said, he will be a guest on one coming up, so be sure to check that out. You can follow that at Game Vault Pod on all social medias. And we also stream about 5 days a week. Every Wednesday is Apex After Dark. Thursday is my Paper Mario streams. Friday is Stranger Damies every other week. Saturday, Jen does something, whether it's Dead by Daylight or Monster Hunter Rise. Dan is on Sunday with Dan of the Wild. And then Tom picks up on Mondays with retro streams, either our retro roulette or a game that he has been playing. And Dan sometimes chips in on Thursday before I go to play some more Dan of the Wild. So just variety. If you like something, you'll probably be able to find it on our channel. So that's, once again, twitch.tv/GameVaultPod.
And that's going to wrap us up. We are They Called Smoovie. You can find us on Spreaker just by searching They Called Smoovie. And that feeds into all your favorite podcast streaming apps. So that's iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Just look for They Called Us a Movie, and we will pop right up. We are the maindaming.com main website where you can find all our shows, articles, and whatever the fuck else we post. And it's also our socials. That's the main Damey is our socials for Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. However, we now have a TikTok where you can find us at specifically They Called This a Movie. So search for They Called This a Movie on TikTok. It'll pop right up. We just started, but we would love your follows on there. And we are also a proud member of Geek Vibes Nation. You can find them at gvnation.com and on all socials and all podcast streaming apps just by searching Geek Vibes Nation. Bunch of great shows, not just us, bunch of shows that are geared towards geeks. So if you're into geek stuff, surely you are going to find a show for you. That's going to wrap it up. The director of Nothing But Trouble is Dan Aykroyd. So for Dan Aquino and Mark Myers, this is Anthony DelVecchio telling Dan Aquino, telling Dan Aykroyd, well, you certainly made a movie, didn't you?
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.